You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Staying with politics now, you know, in Iowa, it was a kind of intense sincerity. In New Hampshire, it was that sophisticated ambivalence in the primary there. What's the pulse of South Carolina voters? Anna Sale has been our non-scientific emissary to voters and voter sentiment in each of these GOP contests, and we're bringing her back here. Anna, thanks for staying with us.
Of course.
So, Anna, tell us about two events in the state yesterday that give us a snapshot of two pretty important voting blocks in this all-important conservative southern primary state.
Okay, so I was here in Myrtle Beach, which was the site of the debate, but also the site of two gatherings of Republican activists yesterday. There was a statewide convention for Tea Party groups, and the Faith and Freedom Coalition held a presidential forum just on the same campus where the debate, the presidential debate, was happening later in the day. So at the Tea Party convention, I went there first and immediately just noticed this, fervent, almost breathless enthusiasm to defeat Obama. And along with that, real frustration that they hadn't all agreed on one candidate. But what I also noticed was here in South Carolina, when you talk to Tea Party activists, you don't just hear about cutting debt and cutting spending. You hear a lot of concern about what they perceive as the creep of secularism. So there's social issues getting mixed in with these spending issues, which is not typically how we think about the Tea Party.
A creep of secularism. I mean, this is a...
These are
explicitly
old culture
secular
things.
Yeah.
These are the things you hear. I mean, talk about the Ten Commandments, talk about prayer in school, and this real sense that Obama has, you know, can continued this march of secularism in America, and we need to get back to social conservative values.
Some would say the march is away from secularism rather than towards secularism, but that's an interesting issue down there in South Carolina. And just to bring me up to speed here, there's real enthusiasm to defeat Barack Obama, but a sense of anxiety about not having chosen a particular candidate, notwithstanding Mitt Romney leading in the polls?
Yeah, even some local groups, the Myrtle Beach Tea Party group, for example, has endorsed Newt Gingrich as an organization, but the members of it all support different candidates. Some support Gingrich, some support Santorum, some support Ron Paul. So you have some people making phone calls on behalf of the group and other people making phone calls based on who they're personally supported. So no consensus there.
And, you know, I'm also interested. The Tea Party, we think of as a basically libertarian, conservative, maybe fiscally conservative group. But you're saying down there with this sort of secularism idea, they're coming close to the Faith and Freedom Coalition, some of the more traditionally social conservative groups as well.
And it was interesting. I actually saw some of the same folks who were at the Tea Party gathering. Then they came over to the other gathering, the Faith and Freedom Coalition, which was having its event where the debate was being held. And the Faith and Freedom Coalition is the group led nationally by Ralph Reed, the former head of the Christian Coalition. At that event, all five presidential candidates took the stage. Romney and Rick Perry had skipped the Tea Party event. But when all five took the stage, they all made their pitch in what sounded almost like a church revival. It was held in a tent. Take a listen to what they each said on the stage.
This is our time. And it is time for people of faith to take this country back.
And we indeed, from a biblical standpoint, a good economic standpoint, we need to look into the morality and the constitutionality of our monetary system.
We don't just need big plans. We need big hearts. We need big souls.
It's a campaign about the soul of America.
Unless a conservative wins on Saturday, we're going to end up with a moderate nominee who, in my judgment, will have a very, very hard time defeating Barack Obama.
The five presidential candidates. You got that right. It resembles a church revival right down to the hum in the microphone there. Let's meet some folks who reacted.
What was interesting was I was paying attention to the crowd because the assumption would be maybe Mitt Romney would get polite applause while others would sort of whip up the audience into a frenzy. But everybody got about the same response from the crowd. Everybody got, you know, people standing, taking pictures, you know, standing ovations. But what I heard when I talked to voters one-on-one, that's when the concerns about Mitt Romney came out. And those were concerns about his Mormon religion, much more than I've run into in New Hampshire and Iowa. For example, I met a woman named Candida Alford, and she told me that she was supporting Gingrich or Perry. She hadn't decided, but it was important that whoever she voted for shared her values. And I asked her what that meant, if that meant that she had reservations about Romney and his religion, and this is what she said.
I do, because I am a Christian, and so that is very important to me. I'm not saying that would definitely, you know, change my vote on it, but that is very important to me.
Now, do you feel this is a subtext behind the scenes? I mean, did anyone actually explicitly talk about Mormonism from the podium?
You know, this actually really reminds me of 2008 covering Barack Obama in West Virginia, and when the issue of whether he was Muslim would come up. It was sort of whispered, and it was something that had kind of spread like rumors across towns. No one said Mormon from the podium, but it was coming up in the crowd. I talked to a guy named Brian Scott. This was really interesting. He showed up at the Faith and Freedom rally, decided on Mitt Romney. He knew he was going to vote for him because he thinks he's got the best shot at beating Barack Obama. But then he told me he was standing, kind of talking to folks around, you know, talking to these other folks he didn't know, and they started raising questions about the Mormon religion, kind of pointing out biblical issues where they differ from Protestant Christianity, for example. And this is what he told me.
He's basically a Mormon, which is neither good or bad right now, but I've got a lot of research to do on that basis.
That's interesting.
So basically he's saying he's got more research to do. He wanted to go home and check out whether what these guys were telling him were true, if he thought that, you know, being a Mormon was being a Christian. It came down to that.
You know, and if the comparison is to Barack Obama, he did pretty well, as I recall, in 2008, even with those questions, even with that whispering campaign in the background. Going back to the podium tape there, you know, I was surprised that Ron Paul sounds like he's getting into the act here.
Wasn't that interesting? And I talked to some Ron Paul supporters there. There were, of course, folks standing on street corners with Ron Paul signs, longtime supporters of Ron Paul. And I asked a guy named Philip LeCroy, who's been a supporter going back to 2003. I asked him what he thought about Ron Paul and his biblical pitch, and this is what he told me.
I hate to use the word politician, but you usually, certain crowds you talk to, you got to talk their language. That's their language. So the Bible, conservatism, you know.
So intense sincerity in Iowa, sophisticated ambivalence in New Hampshire, passionate anybody but Obama in South Carolina. Is that it, Anna?
That's right, and a social conservative line going through it all.
Anna Sale, it's a Free Country's political reporter traveling with the World Channel, a production of WGBH, our partner in Boston. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.